This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Poet and cultural commentator Raja Ahmad Aminullah needs no introduction in the Malaysian literary scene. His most recent publications are a poetry anthology called Ketawalah Tanah Airku, Sajak-Sajak Resistensia, and a non-fiction collection of prose called Conversations with Raja Ahmad Aminullah. And they both continue his critique and questioning of the injustices he sees around him. Raja Ahmad is here with me today. Thank you for joining me. It's very nice to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show, Sharmila.
You seem to be doing so many things at once. Every year, it seems like you have a new book that's out. We were supposed to have you on the show to talk about your poetry anthology from last year. And then I heard that you've got another one that just came out as well. Tell me a little bit about the most recent title.
The book of poetry that I'm very happy about is called Ketawalah Tanah Airku, which was launched during the Kuala Lumpur International Book Fair last year. Yeah. And then actually a few months later, there was another book of poetry that I collated involving 9 Malaysian and 9 Singaporean poets. And that was launched at the Jakarta Book Fair towards the end of last year. So 2 books of poetry. The one launched in Jakarta is called, is a collaboration between a local publisher, ITBM, and Yayasan Obor, which was set up by Mokhtar Lubis, the famous Indonesian journalist. Mm-hmm. It's called Ketika Hitam Dikatakan Putih dan Sajak Tetap Bersuara. I guess a rough translation would be when the color black is said to be white, poetry still voice out.
And then your most recent book,
as you can see, my English is very poor.
Oh, please. You write poetry in English as well, so that's a little hard to believe.
I write largely in Malay. Most of my things are in Malay. Although I have written in English. And for Ketawalah Tanah Airku, subtitled Sajak-Sajak Resistensia.
So what does Sajak Resistensia mean?
Actually, as a whole, I am somewhat firmly in the school of poetry, aptly described by Mioz, the Polish poet and Nobel Prize winner, who wrote a slim book called The Witness of Poetry. And through his writing, and also to the great regional poet, my friend, the late W.S. Rendra, they have both written about poetry as an act of pemberontakan, or an act of rebellion, or of poetry and art generally as being subversive of established orders. So I am still trying to figure out why is it that in our society, literary and cultural activities tend to be very conformist and tend to be pandering to the status quo, especially within the last 20 or 30 years.
But you've been operating in these spaces for longer than the last 20 and 30 years.
Yeah.
What is your observation in terms of why that has happened? Why has our culture scene evolved in this way?
We have had, what I said during the launch recently, we have very much a feudal mindset. And this doesn't augur well for the progression of our beautiful country. If we want to progress, we need to have an enlightened citizenry and certainly intellectuals and poets and writers who can raise questions. And rather than those who are merely yes men or who write things as pens to the establishment figures.
But this is it seems like a problem that sort of exists from the beginning, right? Because we don't have education that emphasizes on things like the arts or literature very much.
Yeah, I would like to differ slightly on that.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that prior to the 70s, we had a literature of engagement.
Of course, yes.
We had in the 30s, the writers, who played a significant role in the struggle for independence. And through the 40s and the 50s, you had the Asas Limapulo writers like Masuri SN, Usman Awang, Harun Amin Rashid, A. Samad Ismail, and so on, who wrote through the columns of the newspapers, who sent in poetry as well as essays decrying colonialism, imperialism, and so on. But in aesthetic fashion, as they were poets, yeah?
I think my experience would be in the last 30 years, which would kind of align with what you said, that in the last 30 years, we've seen almost a decline of a poetry of resistance. Do you see this changing now that we have a new government?
It's too early to tell. I am an optimist and someone who always believes that the glass is half full. So I would like to think that in the new climate that we have, that things would be better in the socio-cultural scene. That we get great films, we get great theatre, dance, and so on, that can somewhat be some kind of barometer of what's happening in our society. As I said before, I love the poetry that I read of Daffodils and et cetera, Yeats, Keats, and of Eliot, you know, and all that. But at the same time, I love the poetry of Neruda, Akhmatova, and, you know, various others, Ginsberg, et cetera, et cetera. So I could not fathom why is it that in general many of our literary output in the last 20 years seem to be focused on things somewhat detached from what's happening. You see, when I go out of my house every day, I see, I'm walking to the LRT station, for instance. I see down the road, I see this migrant worker riding his tricycle full of, or full or not yet full, of reject items. Now, if you euphemistically known as recycled goods. And it gets me to thinking, this person has come to this country from thousands of kilometers away. And from reports that you read, he has probably been fleeced by agents in his home country and similarly treated by local agents as well. Spare a thought, instead of calling them pejorative names, spare a thought for these people. They probably had to sell whatever they have in their home country to come here and then end up as picking up recycled objects to sell. And I walk further down the road and I see these makcik selling nasi lemak or what have you by the roadside. In my mind, probably there is a possibility that she could be a single parent looking after many kids who are school going. And you will see people in official attire somewhat harassing them, perhaps. And then you go further down the road and then you stop at a local warung. You read the newspapers. I'm old and old-fashioned, I guess. The newspapers, and I can see stories of things that go wrong in society, of money trails, of embezzlement, of corruption, and acts of transgression against the laws of a country. So I said, how is it that not much, if at all, literary artwork, whether novels or poetry, touches on these things? It's not that I want it to be like a gung-ho kind of agitprop. Agitprop has a different function.
Right.
I can enjoy it, but it's a different function. And to me, that's not literature in that, in that sense of the term. But at the same time, why is it that we're not doing it? Similarly, when I was invited to give a talk on the effect or impact of Syed Hussein Al-Attar's book in the 70s, at the time when I was a student. And on the way to the students fetched me, and then on the way to the accommodation that they had put up for me, I saw the roads were red, the side roads. So I asked them, why is the roads red? Paraja, haven't you heard about the bauxite? I said, no, because I'm old-fashioned. I read newspapers. And as we seem to have not reported on this. So I came back. I wrote a poem on that.
Unbox and mining.
Yes, yes. On the issue, without being too direct, but still it was very clear. And with a photo and my social media, I took a photo of it as well. And then several days later, there was reports in the newspapers. But in the comment section of the of my posting, of my IG syncs to my FB, but in this particular, the comments were in the FB section. And there were two friends who are in editorial positions in two different newspapers. One of them said that he had done some sketches on the issue. So I said, what the hell? If you are an editor or a senior figure there, this should be reported.
Right.
Not sketches in your sketchbook hidden somewhere. But you see, this is what happens. And then there was another case, a poem that I wrote. I think it's called Puisi Keindahan Perjuangan Hidup. When I heard about two student leaders in local university being threatened with expulsion because they had organized a forum. It was about 2 years back. So I wrote a poem and I dedicated that with that title and I dedicated to the two student activists whom, of course, I did not know at the time, although subsequently I got to know them. Afiqah Zulkifli and Hanif Mahpa. At the end of my posting the poem, I tagged my friend who was the vice-chancellor of university. I tagged her husband as well, who was my junior in school. Mm-hmm. I tagged a couple of ministers who had FB presence, although I don't know whether they actually read it. I tagged a certain then chief minister, Menteri Besar, who had been a lecturer at that university. So my point is, when I write, I'm not the kind of... I would like to be not the kind of person baling batu sembunyi tangan. You know?
Yeah.
I would like to call things as I see them. Mm. And perhaps for that reason also, there are some of my younger, perhaps more revolutionary friends who tell me, but Raja, sometimes too soft, his words. And then I would say, okay, firstly, maybe unfortunately, I'm no more your age. I have to admit that. And secondly, because I want to be responsible for every word I utter.
It sounds like you're very active on social media with all of this tagging and Instagramming. And
yes, because I think that's the way to go. Like books of poetry, for example. There was a time when, I think it still is, when the leading literary agency, Dewan Bahasa, for example, they published books of poetry and it all ends up in the Jualan Gudang or in the stores. So I said, why don't I write and put it, besides writing for books, but also putting them, some of them, even before it's in a book, over social media. Mm. And I know that by doing that, I definitely am getting more readers. How do you know? Because you know social media.
Yes.
You know how.
You get your engagement.
You can find out. And also, sometimes, these guys, they do readings or discussion of books. And then both this book and an earlier book called Minda Tertawan, Intellectual Roshan Fikir dan Kuasa, which roughly translates as Captive Mind, Intellectuals and Power. So they frequently hold small group discourses. Since the last 10 years, I think this is the way to go. Small autonomous units. Yeah. So sometimes some faraway area in Sabah or Kedah or Perak or Johor, and then they do posting on it, then that's how I know. Secondly, sometimes they wouldn't have my phone number because we wouldn't know each other yet. So over Facebook, they will ask me, can we have a discussion on this book, Pak Raja? I said, why do you need to ask me? The book is published, it's public. It's for you to say that this book is hopeless, for example. And then perhaps it would be better if you can say why you don't like it. But one thing I will not be so charitable, perhaps if you say, I don't like this book because the writer's nose is huge or his ears are long, you know, which, as you know, is a very recurrent theme in local critique of works, focusing on the personal.
Very shallow and personal, yeah.
Yes, you certainly take the words from our very shallow and not focusing on the content.
I'm speaking to poet Raja Ahmad Aminullah. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to poet and cultural commentator Raja Ahmad Aminullah, who most recently published a poetry anthology and a book of conversations. In terms of the themes that are present in Kataulatan Haiku, what are some of the themes?
For example, there's one sajak that I wrote which asks the question of what would happen if our workers, you know, the one who sweeps the streets and clean, were not to down tools for a couple of days. You know, I know this topic is not new. Other people have written on it as well. But, you know, there's something like that. And then there are other poems as well. Of course, there are a couple of poems that are quite personal in nature. I think one is talks about me and my daughter, and one about me and my better half.
Yeah,
you know,
the one about your wife I liked a lot. Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
Did she like it?
Yeah, I guess so. Being a more intelligent person than me, she was a research scientist. Mm. So I guess
The book that just came out, however, is not poetry; it's prose.
Yes.
And it's called Conversations with Raja Ahmad Aminullah.
Yes.
What is the structure of this book?
This when I decided I want to do this book, Conversations, I had the inspiration based on my readings in the past. For example, book of conversations, several books of conversations with Edward Said, the Palestinian-American intellectual. Mm-hmm. And then there was a later one, I think about 2 years back, Conversations with Arundhati Roy, which I love very much. And then, of course, Chomsky, you know. So, of course, I'm saying that my book is anywhere near that level, as I told my dear friend Jomo when I met him a couple of days back. And he asked, congratulated me. I said, but you haven't read the book. And secondly, I said, these are merely plebeian expressions. Maybe, you know, I've been slightly influenced by the former colonials, you know, the so-called self-deprecatory sense of humor, which anyway is better than slapstick that we see here.
And self-deprecation, I think, helps set expectations, maybe. The reader gets to decide.
Yes. Yeah. Precisely. Because when you write, you know, the book is published, you're no more in control.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it is.
So who are these conversations in the book with?
Half of the conversations, finally, were specifically designed for the book. And the other half, roughly, the other half was interviews that were either recorded, or mostly recorded, including one with Sharad Kutan and Fuad Rahman. I think that chapter is called The Silence of the Intellectuals, there are three in English, yeah? There was another one with...
And that's based on a segment that you've done with BFM before, The Silence of Intellectuals.
Yes. And then there was another one with Chilling, and there's another one with Sophia Halim, who used to work with The Edge. And then the ones in Malay, there are student activists, and there's one with Indonesians, person who was doing his postgraduate studies, strategic studies, Malaysia-Indonesia relationships. So that's quite interesting. And there is also an academician who also wrote a foreword for the book, Awang Azman Awang Pawi. Yeah.
And what are some of the topics that you talk about?
There's student activism, there's Indonesian-Malaysian relationships, there is something about cultural and literary issues. There's something about the 70s as well. A bit of a... Well, I was prodded, so I had to walk down memory lane, something that I'm not terribly fond of. But surprisingly, there is a great deal of interest, especially from the new generation, about things that happened in the 70s. And I realized that there is because there is not that kind of writing, not that kind of literature that's been produced.
Yeah.
Unlike, say, the Philippines or Thailand or Indonesia. So, in particular Indonesia. So, you see, you get to read, you were born later, but you get to read what happens in the 60s, the 70s, 80s. But if you were born later, you don't know what happened in the 60s, the 70s, 80s, the crazy years of the 90s. No one knows what happened.
Yes.
You know, the Gaga boom years again.
Mm-hmm.
No one really knows what happened. So what the society became, like what it became.
Do you see yourself as kind of carrying on the torch for that generation?
No, I'm not a torch carrier of anything. I'm just a plebeian poet, you know.
How do you keep finding your inspiration to continue being a plebeian poet?
The one thing I know is that I do not wait for ilham or inspiration, you know, or a muse, you know. I mean, in those kinds of poems that I write, you know, things that I see sometimes help to generate my cerebrum, you know. I mean, it comes from the heart. So it's a combination of the heart and the cerebrum, which I believe, personally, I believe is the way to go.
When you look back at the work that you've produced, your first collection of poetry, I think, came out in 2004.
Yeah.
2000. Menyarung Jiwa.
Yeah. Later on translated Soulship.
Right. So from then till now, what differences do you see in your poetry?
You see, Menyarung Jiwa was a compilation of things that I wrote, including from my student days in the 70s, and then a couple in the 80s, and then maybe there's a bit of a vacuum, and then the late 90s and early 2000s, so that was what became Menyarung Jiwa. During the launch of the book, Fahmi read the poem. Fahmi Fadil was then a young would-be theatre person. So I said, wow, this guy should be the artist of the future.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I bump into him, I always tell him, Fahmi, please don't forget your roots. Come back to the arts field.
Well, he's in a theatre of a different kind now.
I know. And that was my answer when people ask me, why is it that you did not write for many years? Mm. So I said, in my school days, of course, school days is very perhaps normal for many people. I was a regular P. Ramlee in terms of writing the play and directing and producing and main actor. The only thing I couldn't do was the choreography or the dance when there was one. So I got someone else. And then on an exchange program in the States, shipboard-based program, conducted by an American college. Four of us from Malaysia were selected. And then I took courses in, other than government's political science, yeah, and economics. I took one course in theatre, vocal projection specifically, and the other course in creative writing, poetry. I remember I got, well, sorry to plug this, but quite good grades for that. I still have the book to show. But but after that, I was on campus, and when we went there, I was in the lower six. But all the other students from the States, some were masters, some were sophomores or juniors or seniors from Taiwan. I think they were master's graduates and so on.
Mm.
We were the only pre-university, but we held our own in any of the classes that we registered for, the four of us. After that, I was on campus. Well, I worked briefly as a journalist with NST. And then after that, I was on campus. I was elected into the union in my second month there. And from then onwards, that so-called wider stage took over. I call it now a distraction.
Mm.
A distraction for over 20 years.
This is your political career that you're talking about.
Whatever you call it. Yes.
Mm.
As you know, I've been on both sides of the divide.
Yes. So are you happier being a poet?
Happier but poorer. But Because when my first book, Poetry, Menyayu, was launched, Tau Kahung wrote a review as in a star. I think it was a page long. So, and in it, he mentioned like something like Unless is a book by Eliot or Neruda or some Sastrawan. Having a book poetry is like leaves falling down a canyon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're lucky to sell two or three books. I was lucky to be able to meet him sometime later and tell him that, you know, I sold more than two, three books on the nine itself. So, and it was republished, actually, by another publisher later on. When he wrote that, I asked my kids to teach me how to use the email, and I wrote something and sent it to him, something along the lines of not being beholden to power and quoting Usman Awang, Rendra, and for many years, my favorite writer, Vaclav Havel. I love his essays, especially, not so much his plays, but his essays, especially one called The Power of the Powerless. I've always been quoting that. And then I met a young politician then who was coming to, and it was a forum or a small seminar organized by one NGO, and, you know, it was unfortunate for him, although we later became firm friends, but that, you know, at our first encounter, I berated him through my email to Thor, saying that be careful of politicians trying to write on the arts kind of thing, you know. So, because I've seen too many of that.
But I'm curious, among the newer crop of writers and poets, are there any that catch your eye?
Oh, yes, sorry, I forgot to mention that. I really am sorry, because I feel that the generation, not only poets and writers, but even academicians and others who grew up in the 80s and 90s are the ones who have been compromised because of the way our society was being structured. They were substantially molded into being people who wanted to fit in, who wanted to conform. And you know, you can't get great literature. What more, win Nobel Prizes. I always laugh when they write in the papers about, you know, we should have a, you know, I always laugh with these things. Anyway, where is this fetish about being Nobel Prize winner?
Yes, about winning awards and...
Or a Sastra Wanagara thing. My best example was this case. This someone in the Middle East, I will mention the country, had won an award. So, on the night in question, he went to the award ceremony. If I'm not mistaken, the president of the country was there. If not president, his deputy was there. And his name was duly announced as the award winner. He walked slowly up the stage, a novelist, well-known novelist. And then he announced, "Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, excellencies. Thank you very much for offering me this award. Now, I would like to announce my rejection of the award." And he went down. That is my kind of guy. Because when you want or you feel the need for legitimation, it's quite difficult to be the person you are. It's what, like, for example, Edward Said calls, you know, you can be friends of people in positions of power, but jaga jarak, you know, keep a distance.
Yes.
In terms of, not as in the judge scenario, the judicial, no, not in that sense, but in terms of doing things or deciding on things that matter. Personal leadership is one thing, but in that sense. Although I will not be so unkind as to say that one shouldn't.
Mm.
I understand our contacts and all that, yeah? But I have voiced this out even when I was not known as a writer. Back in the early 90s or late 80s, there was a seminar organized by the Writers Association, Asian level, and among the panel was Kushwan Singh, the editor of Penguin India at the time.
Yes.
At the time, also, he was 80 plus, at that time. I think he went on to almost 100, yeah?
He did, 90 yes.
Plus, yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Anyway, he was on a panel. There was this, you know, someone distinguished. And all that. I was then, of course, in a different sector, and I came with my corporate uniform and all that. And then I just couldn't stomach the questions that were being asked by I'll be crucified, never mind. But so I put up my hands from the back of the room, and I asked the question. Before asking, I made a short. Well, as I said, the writers in Latin America, they live in relatively repressive societies, you know. Many, not only Neruda, but Miguel Asturias and Gabriel Garcia Marquez and Ernesto Cardenal, the Nicaraguan poet, and so on, yeah. So too, the writers in Eastern Europe, when it was under the Iron Curtain, and people like Ivan Klima, Vaclav Havel. So the question that was most asked was, please have more awards. I mean, by our friends. Please have, we don't have enough awards. We want more awards, more competitions. That's what got me. That's what got me, I said. The writers in Latin America, the writers were in a state of repression in Eastern Europe. And then, but then again, the writers in UK or in Western Europe or in the States, they were not in a state of repression in that sense. In both cases, these writers create great writings. It's nothing to do with awards, nothing to do with competitions. So I'm sorry, I'm really bad, because I do know that there are writers who depend somewhat, you know, there are. I know some friends who do depend.
Sure.
You know, and they're paid a pittance. Mm. You know, I don't send my poems to newspapers or whatever, but I do know that when they send it to newspapers, the newspapers, the media, pay them a pittance. Mm. The rate they were paid, say, 30 years ago, and they're still being paid that rate. At a panel discussion during one of the book fairs, I spoke on this topic. I spoke about professionalism. So I said, writers need to make a living. You know, they can't, like, not all of the writers are lecturers or cikgus or professors, whatever, again. So I said, if they were paid 75 ringgit for a poem published in a Sunday newspaper 30 years ago, why is it still 75 or 100 ringgit now?
Right.
So I said, I would like to issue this appeal for you guys to put on your social media tonight that Raja Maminullah said this. I'm asking the chairman of the media organizations, the chief editors, the editorial department people, why is it that you are humiliating our writers? Mm-hmm. Kenapa menghina penulis-penulis kita dengan beri bayaran sebegitu? Mm. And then, when I walked down, I mean, after the discussion, I met these two elderly gentlemen poets. One was in his 70s. Is in his 70s, you know, and the other is in his late 50s. And the one in his 70s said, Pak Raja, I don't know why he calls Pak Raja, because he's older than me. Pak Raja, and then I had my poem published recently, and they paid me 50 ringgit. The other guy said, Pak Raja, I was paid 25 ringgit. My God, I wanted to say some rude thing, but I held my tongue because whatever it was, they were earning some income. I always remind people this because the late Indonesian poet W.S. Rendra, when I hosted him for a program in Ipoh in the 1990s, he mentioned in one of the sessions that writing is a profession. So, I guess, back to the forum in the talk in PwC, not one of them put it about social media. Because I guess if they put it out, their poems will not be published ever again. That is the vile part of this bargain, which I want to speak out again and again.
I do know that you're going to finish off by reading one of your poems for us.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're most welcome, Shamila. And thank you for having me on the show. I will read this poem called Meeting an Old Friend. Today, I met an old friend who appeared and actually said, I am depressed. Why? Why are you doing this yourself? I said. Why are you angry? And to this, he replied with a vehement shaking of his head. No, no, I am not angry. But are you oblivious to the news in all kinds of media? Of bank accounts and money trails? Gifts and donations? Of the personal and the institutional? Of faraway islands and havens where once vagabonds and pirates roam? No, I am not angry, he says. Although my concentration at work is affected and my boss speaks in hushed tones with his friends who come visiting, and I can tell they are not discussing synergies nor business expansion. And I dare not ask my boss, why are you speaking in hushed tones when usually you bark out your instructions? Again, I ask my friend, are you sure you are not angry? And he said, no, I'm not angry. Are you infected by Nelsonian blindness? Can't you see and can't you hear? Or are you like the tail of the three monkeys? See no evil and hear no evil? I am sorry, I said to my old friend. We haven't met for a long time, and it pains me to see you like this. Forgive me my trespass. And finally he said, no, it's not your fault that Faustian characters are mushrooming in our land and good people become chameleons, values are jettisoned, and Mammon rides roughshod. No, it's not you, he says, and I am not angry. But after Sir John's in several universities and working in professional environments for some time, I do resent being thought of as stupid, being fobbed off with creative explanations which did not really explain, with half-truths and transfers and acts of unfairness which militates against the dictates of my faith. And my friend continued, can you understand what I'm saying? Never mind. We haven't met for a year now. Let's go and down a teh tarik or two.
I've been speaking to poet and cultural commentator Raja Ahmad Aminullah, who most recently published a poetry collection called Ketawalah Tanah Airku, Sajak-Sajak Resistensia, and a non-fiction collection of prose called Conversations with Raja Ahmad Aminullah. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on our BFM app. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.